From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This past Friday, a pair of hospitals in northern Illinois closed their doors, at least one of them for good, at least so far. St. Margaret's Health in both Spring Valley and Peru had been serving the Illinois Valley for 120 years. Administrators cited the COVID-19 pandemic and a ransomware attack among the reasons for the closures. Most services at the Peru location had already been shut down since January. A different system, OSF Healthcare, had signed a letter of intent to take over services in Peru. That said, there's no timeline for reopening, and it's not known if OSF also plans on acquiring the Spring Valley location. The closure of these facilities is raising awareness about the role of hospitals in rural areas and questions about what happens when they leave communities behind. Joining us now to talk more about this is George Pink, Deputy Director of the University of North Carolina Rural Health Research Program. That's at the Scheps Center for Health Services Research. George, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also joining us, Jenna Webster, an anchor and multi-skilled journalist for WQAD-TV in the Quad Cities. She's covered the closure of St. Margaret's Health. Jenna, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And finally, also with us to talk about the cybersecurity angle of this story, we're joined by Jacob Young, who's director of the Center for Cybersecurity at Bradley University in Peoria. Jacob, welcome to you to the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian. Welcome. Happy to be here.
Thank you for being with us. And listeners, as ever, if you want to join our conversation, especially maybe if you have been served by a rural hospital or maybe you've seen one close or scale back services in your part of the state, let us know about it. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. And particularly if you are being affected by the closure of St. Margaret's Health in Spring Valley or Peru, we'd love to hear from you at 800-222-9455. All right, Jenna Webster, WQAD, I'm going to start with you. Just tell us a little bit more about the reasons behind the closure of St. Margaret's Health.
Yeah, so a lot of it, what they're saying, comes down to just finances. Like, their whole thing was that it was financially impossible for them to stay open. So kind of like you said, in January, they had announced that they were going to be, at the time they said it was just temporary, that they'd be closing its locations out in Peru, and they were trying to get some new rural emergency hospital designation that would allow them to, you know, kind of get some of that funding to stay open. But ultimately that did not play out. And as we saw last Friday, they officially closed all those locations in Peru. And then again, the ones in Spring Valley. And, you know, kind of like you mentioned, they said it had to do with COVID-19, that they're having to bring in a lot of extra staff to help deal with that. You know, which kind of, from a financial standpoint, made things difficult for them. And then they also cited the cybersecurity attack. That only impacted the Spring Valley location. They said it didn't have any impact on Peru, that their services weren't impacted by that. But, you know, one of the things with that cybersecurity attack was that it lasted 4 months. And, you know, in some instances, some of their services were offline for a year. And they, you know, weren't meeting timelines that they needed to fill out for insurance plans, Medicare, Medicaid, stuff like that. So all of those bills weren't getting paid, and the hospital was kind of on the hook for those.
Fascinating. All right, George, thank you for that, Jenna. And George Pink, I want to bring you into the conversation now. What you heard Jenna talking about there, are those common reasons as to why rural hospitals close?
Yes, unfortunately, they are very common. So when we study rural hospital closures at the Scheps Center, we've identified sort of three large buckets of reasons why rural hospitals close. The first are what we call market factors. They're located in areas with small or declining populations that have high unemployment, high increasing uninsured patients, a high proportion of Medicare and Medicaid patients. The second bucket are what we call hospital factors. They have low daily census. They're having trouble attracting physicians. The facility is deteriorating physically, and sometimes there's malfeasance. And finally, the third bucket is the most important bucket, which is the financial bucket. Typically, these hospitals have been losing money for a long, long period of time. This is not an annual kind of event where, oh, we lost some money last year, let's close. They've been losing money for a long time. They sell off their assets, they draw down their reserves, they max out their credit, and they just finally run out of ways to pay the bills.
Interesting. All right, Jacob Young, I want to bring you into the conversation now. We mentioned this cybersecurity attack, or a ransomware attack in particular. Can you remind us, what is a ransomware attack?
So ransomware is basically using one of our best tools, encryption, against us. So we talk about the CIA triad. This is not the intelligence agency. It's an acronym for confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And those are kind of the three primary goals that we're trying to maintain when we employ any kind of security controls. And ransomware directly attacks the availability of data. So most people think of confidentiality as the only thing we worry about, but we want to keep our information secure and confidential, but we also want it to be reliable and that we can trust the data and also be available to the people that need it. So ransomware goes after the availability component by essentially encrypting everything that you're, you know, relying on, your information, your systems, and freezes them until you pay the ransom that they're requiring to get the encryption keys to decrypt it. Now, the original form of ransomware was just that. It would simply encrypt it on the existing systems, and once you paid the ransom and complied with their demands, then you would get the key and you'd be, you know, essentially back up and running. However, data backups are the solution to preventing this type of ransomware, and the shorter your interval, the more quickly you can restore those backups. You can basically forget about the ransom itself and just restore things from scratch, and the encryption is no longer an issue. Of course, the cyber criminal organizations have gotten used to that, thwarting a lot of their attempts, so they're now starting to move towards attacking the confidentiality. So instead of it just being encrypted on your existing systems and you still technically control it, you just can't access it, now they're moving towards more of a exfiltration, stealing your data, and if you don't pay them, they're going to publish it and result in a true data breach. So it's evolved. We're always playing kind of this cat and mouse game, trying to catch up and adapt as they adapt. But really the critical thing is getting, you know, your incident response plans, business continuity planning, having those data backups, practicing going through these types of situations so that you're prepared whenever it does happen and you're not you know, suffering the consequences of what we're seeing here.
Yeah, and I want to come back to you a little later to ask about some tips for people and what businesses need to think about. But I guess I do want to stay on this point for a moment because, and I don't know if you want to comment on the particular information security practices of these hospitals or this health system, and I understand if you don't, but in a general way, how would you rate the cybersecurity of these, you know, smaller rural hospitals and other institutions, which obviously that's a critical factor for them, given the necessity of keeping health information confidential.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not privy to exactly how it played out in this particular case, but we do offer free vulnerability assessments for local small and medium-sized businesses, more so in the Peoria area. But I can tell you that small and medium-sized businesses, and I would kind of put the rural healthcare systems in this category, are incredibly vulnerable. We have senior undergraduate cybersecurity students performing these security assessments for our clients, and I'll just tell you this, we're pretty hard to stop. When we go after our clients, and we're doing this from an ethical hacking standpoint, we're trying to wake them up and show them the vulnerabilities that our students have identified. You know, we ultimately reveal it in a report and a presentation at the end of the semester, but they're novices. This is the first time that they've actually engaged in this type of, you know, ethical hacking and with a real live client, and we're not having much trouble getting in. So you can imagine what it would be like for a well-trained, you know, criminal enterprise that's operating from a foreign country with very little fear of repercussions. So yes, I would definitely say that small and medium-sized businesses, they may think that they're not a target because they're not big enough or interesting enough, but I can tell you that's absolutely not the case. and you absolutely have to prioritize your cybersecurity, or you're running the risk of your business going under in a matter of days or weeks.
Hmm. All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are talking about the closure of a health system, hospitals in Spring Valley in Peru, in northern Illinois. These are both rural healthcare facilities, and one of them has been taken over, or apparently has a letter of intent to take over, by OSF Healthcare. The other one, it's not clear what the future of that is, the other location, but basically the location in Peru may open at some point. The future for Spring Valley is far more uncertain. They're both closed as of last Friday. We're talking about this with Jacob Young, who is director of the Center for Cybersecurity at Bradley University in Peoria, because one of the reasons cited for the closure was financial crippling, in part because of a ransomware attack at one of the hospitals. We're also talking about this with Jenna Webster, who is with WQAD-TV and has covered this story, and George Pink, for more of a 30,000-foot view, who is from the Shep Center for Health Services Research and looks at rural health and hospitals from a nationwide perspective. And George, let me ask you about that. Broadly speaking, in Illinois, I know you've been looking at this since, we're at least looking at closures going back to 2005. How many rural hospitals have closed here, and how does Illinois compare nationally?
Yeah, since 2005, 195 rural hospitals have closed, about 140 or so since 2010. Illinois has had four rural hospitals closed since that period, one this year, one in 2022, 2016, and 2005. So Illinois has not suffered as many rural hospital closures as other states, particularly in the South. The majority of rural hospital closures have been in the South and in states that have not expanded Medicaid.
So say more just about a rural hospital in general. What makes a rural hospital rural? What makes them important? Why not just, have people ambulanced or helicoptered even into the big city if they need that care?
Well, rural hospitals are often the only major healthcare provider within a long distance around many rural communities. They provide access to healthcare, particularly emergency care. When we go to communities and talk to them about the effects of rural hospital closure on their town, almost inevitably the first absence they miss the most is emergency care, the emergency department. When you're having a stroke, when you're having a baby, driving 30, 40, 50 minutes to the next town is not very feasible or likely to have as good outcomes as if it's done locally. So it's the access to local healthcare that really is the most important role that these rural hospitals play.
Yeah, definitely. I know EMTs talk about that golden hour, especially in trauma cases, where we can really improve someone's chances if you get them in quickly. Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Kelly is calling from, is it Leroy on line one? Kelly, thank you for calling in.
Hey.
So I understand you have family who live near one of these hospitals.
Yeah, my parents live just 20 minutes from St. Margaret's. That's their primary hospital. They've used both the Springfield and Peru locations. Last year, my dad actually had a heart attack.
Oh, my.
And he was able to go to St. Margaret's. At the time, the available cardiac response unit beds at the major hospital nearby within an hour were full. But St. Margaret's was able to hold him for multiple days until they could life flight him to a hospital that was 3 hours away to find him an ICU cardiac unit bed. And I'm extremely worried because had we not had St. Margaret's, he would have driven to the hospital that was full. What would they have done?
Yeah, wow. How is he doing today?
He's doing much, much better. He's had several procedures done at that hospital 3 hours away, and they've been able to stabilize him. So Wow. It's worked out. But it is, you know, that's an entire day or more. It's hard to visit. That's 4.5 hours from me. My parents would love for my sister and I to move back home. My sister just had a baby. In order for her to receive any sort of prenatal care, she'd be over an hour without St. Margaret's there. So
wow.
It kind of makes it so you don't want to move home. And a lot of that, you know, the community is convinced that that is because so many people are on Medicaid or Medicare in the area, and the hospitals have just been hemorrhaging for years and years. So kind of a nail in the coffin, but probably not the biggest thing that caused it to be not profitable.
Yeah. Well, Kelly, we need to take a break on the show, but thank you so much for calling in. I'm glad to hear your dad's doing better. And again, thank you for sharing your story with us. We're going to continue this conversation after we take a short break, talking about the closure of two rural hospitals in northern Illinois, both part of St. Margaret's Health in Spring Valley and Peru. We're going to continue. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. Nate, I see you on the line there. Stay with us. We'll get to you when we come back. This is The 21st Show. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about the closure of St. Margaret's Health locations, hospitals in Spring Valley and Peru, both in northern Illinois. Administrators cited the COVID-19 pandemic and increased costs related to that, as well as a ransomware attack among the reasons for the closures. At least one of the facilities, there's a letter of intent from OSF Healthcare to take it over, the one in Peru, but there's no timeline for reopening, and it's not known if OSF or any other system might acquire and reopen the Spring Valley location. We're talking about all of this with George Pink, who looks at this trend of rural hospital closures nationally through his work at the University of North Carolina Rural Health Research Program. That's at the Shepps Center for Health Services Research. Also, Jacob Young, who's director of the Center for Cybersecurity at Bradley University here in Illinois, in Peoria. And Jenna Webster, who's covered this story as an anchor and journalist at WQAD-TV in the Quad Cities. And Jenna, I wanted to ask you, you heard from Kelly there talking about her father and his heart attack. I wonder if you've heard similar stories from other residents and just what local people have been telling you.
Yeah, I mean, I remember last winter when they kind of announced that these facilities in Peru would be closing. They had a press conference specifically related to the OB services. And there was a lot of pregnant women, expectant mothers, worried about, you know, not having those services available, and them saying, in all my appointments leading up to my due date, like, I'm going to have to take all this time off work to travel 30 minutes away for the healthcare, the services that I need. And that was a big concern. And then last week, even talking with the mayor of Spring Valley, one of the things she was saying was that her mother was on hospice care, and they were coming that day and they were taking away all of the medical equipment that her mom uses. So her hospital bed, her breathing tubes, she was going to be without all of those. And I remember I asked her, like, what happens next? She had said, we're exploring options to, find another provider to get, services to her as quick as possible, but we don't know how long she's going to be without the care that she needs. So I think it's just, there's a lot of uncertainty that comes with this. And another thing the mayor had said was that, in these rural towns, people come there because there is a hospital, there is healthcare nearby. She was living half a mile away. Like, people don't have to drive 20, 30 minutes somewhere. So now she's saying, like, are people going to want to come and live here? Like, what's this going to do to the economy? And also not having all of these jobs here with the hospital closing.
Let's get another caller in at 800-222-9455. Nate is calling from Hennepin on line 4. Nate, I understand you live in the area as well. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, Hennepin's about 15 minutes away from both Spring Valley and Peru hospitals.
So I understand. What's your question? You want to know about one of the public officials?
Yeah. In the run-up to the closures at the facilities, the hospital board and administration has said that they've tried to explore securing additional funding from the state several different times. And I think that's, you know, fairly common for rural hospitals that they receive these types of supplemental funding. But then now with the closure, the two local representatives, Lance Yadnok and Sue Resin, have issued a joint statement saying that the funding wasn't given from the state because the hospital was refusing to use that funding to stay open and would rather pay off their creditors than use the funding to stay open. So I thought that was a failure of the administration and, you know, and also the state securing health care for people because it's, you know, we're in a desert now in our area. Mm.
All right. Well, Nate, thank you for calling in. Jenna, I don't know if you can weigh in on public officials and possible, you know, state support. I guess it's water, what did they say, under the bridge, over the dam at this point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I know one of the things we haven't gotten a lot of information about that. I know the statement he's referring to that the state legislators had put out, and they, in their statement, cited that there was an advance payment from OSF that they thought was going to be used for payroll and paying staff, and it was used to pay debts owed to the bank. So we haven't gotten a lot of answers on that, but he is right that there is a lot of skepticism and, you know, people wondering about what happened with this possibility for state financial help.
Hmm. George, big picture, what policies, you know, do we need to be looking at to in order to maintain access to health care facilities in rural areas?
Well, into 2020, Congress passed legislation that created the first new Medicare payment designation in 26 years. And it's called a rural emergency hospital. Rural emergency hospitals are aimed specifically at communities like Peru, where the hospital is at imminent or likely closure of the inpatient facility. The rural emergency hospital has no acute care inpatient services. It's an emergency facility, an outpatient facility only. It has observation beds. It has to have a transfer agreement with a level one trauma center. It can be staffed by physician, nurse practitioner, and so on. And it has a very different payment mechanism compared to hospitals. The hope is that this new model will be an effective replacement for hospitals that are at financial risk of closing. As of today, June 20th, there are 5 new rural emergency hospitals. They've been approved since January 1st. So some people are optimistic that this is going to solve, it won't solve every community's problems, but it's certainly one option that the federal government has come up with.
Interesting. It almost sounds like a MASH unit or a sort of a triage center. Stabilize and then ship the patient out somewhere where they can get more advanced care.
Yes, there's some aspect of that, but the financial basis for this new model, one that will make it work, is a large outpatient service with specialized services, clinics, specialty services to meet local need.
Okay. Jacob, I want to bring you back into the conversation, talking about, again, ransomware, cybersecurity. I mean, we were talking about how this can hit anyone, and just because you're a small business or a medium-sized business, you're certainly not going to necessarily escape the notice of people who are looking to make money off of these schemes. What should people be doing to keep themselves safe?
Well, as I mentioned before, you know, especially when it comes to ransomware, the data backups are very important. You know, ensuring you have the shortest interval possible to be able to restore service as quickly as possible. It goes to your incident response plans, you know, rehearsing things just like you would do a fire drill. You don't want to be, you know, caught red-handed and not know what you're doing. So following those pre-planned procedures is definitely going to give you your best chance at recovering. But the way that, you know, ransomware typically would be, introduced into an organization is typically through social engineering, like phishing emails. So someone clicks on a link in an email and accidentally downloads something that ultimately perpetuates the ransomware throughout the network. And so it really comes back to the user, security awareness training. So trying to ensure that your employees all recognize that they have a role to play, that it's not just IT's responsibility to protect the organization, that every single individual in that organization has to take cybersecurity seriously. And if you can get that across the board, then your overall security posture as an organization would certainly improve. There's no perfect solution to any security issue, but the more you can beef up your security across the board, the better your chances of making it through without a major disruption improve.
Indeed. I do believe I took a cybersecurity training at a workplace once that was called Securing the Human, and we are the weak links there, aren't we?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank Jacob Young from Bradley University, George Pink from the University of North Carolina Rural Health Research Program, and Jenna Webster with WQAD-TV. This has been informative. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.